Welcome to the Natural Running Network. We are brought to you by Mio, makers of the world's first strapless heart rate monitor sports watches, and MedHab, makers of RPM Squared, an innovative system of gait analysis that slips right into your running shoes. My name is Richard Diaz. I am your host. Are you a runner? Do you love to get out and challenge yourself? Running your first marathon or maybe caught the bug of obstacle racing? Well, sit tight because this is a show you just don't want to miss. Good morning, everyone from the West Coast and all of you folks around the world that are listening to us this morning. Well, I guess it may not be morning in other parts of the world. I have a tremendous show for you this morning. So today, I have Luke Humphrey. Luke is the head coach, owner of the Hansons Brooks Distance Project. He is author of the Hansons Marathon Method and recently released the new book is the Hansons Half Marathon Method. Luke has some interesting thoughts about how one should prepare for these events, and I am chafing to have an opportunity to speak with him and get his take on why he does what he does, what he prescribes, and why he does this type of training. But it should be really interesting because obviously enough, I've got a lot of questions that I'd like to ask Luke. I've read both of the books, and they're good reads. And, Luke being an exercise physiologist, that makes it even that much more interesting for me. Luke has he's qualified for Olympic trials twice. He was a fifth place finisher at the San Diego Marathon with a PR of 2:14:39. So clearly, he's got some skills. Very popular book, incidentally. A lot of guys out there in the world have asked me what my opinion was about their system of training, and I know that there are some folks that are planning to shoot me some questions that I might ask in their regard for Luke to answer. But good stuff. Good stuff all around. This is my thing. I really, really enjoy training programs that are set up for this long distance and the physiology and the why and where to for to produce these training programs. So should be good stuff. Now, incidentally, while we're on the subject and I'm waiting for Luke to come on live, I'm going to plug my training program. If someone wants to have me get a look at the way they're running because they've been plagued with injuries, they can't seem to get away from, the injuries that have just kept them from achieving their goals, and they're so frustrated with having to have these repeat visits to the doctor who lets them know, well, yeah, that knee's pretty inflamed. I'll send you to physical therapy. You get out of physical therapy and they say, yeah, you're good to go. Go back out and run again. And sure enough, you hurt yourself again. Let's get you out of that quagmire. We're offering up what I call virtual video analysis. If you send me some video clips, I get a chance to get a look at what you're doing. I will pump those video clips that you've given me into my software, make some notes, show some indications of what I think you're doing wrong or what you might want to change, send those videos back to you, then we'll schedule a live phone call where we'll go over the information and try to get to the bottom of the problem and see if we can't get you running again. It's really quite a service. It's new for us. We haven't really done that before. It is part of our online coaching program, but I thought it might be interesting for those who are just needing a little bit of help to give them an opportunity to do it for relatively inexpensive fee. And to find out more about that, you simply go to our website, DiazHumanPerformance.com, and there you'll have it. Well, it looks like I have got Luke just came live here, and let me get him on the line. Good morning, Luke Humphrey.
Hi, how are you?
I am tremendous. How are you, sir?
I am doing well.
So, Luke, you're from Michigan.
I am, yep.
Have you spent all your life there?
I have. I'm originally from the west side of the state, more Grand Rapids area, so I grew up there and then went to Central Michigan University and then moved from there to just north of Detroit and Rochester with the, where the Hanson Brooks Distance Project is, and yeah, so for 30-some years, that's where I've been.
You know, Luke, I was raised in Michigan myself. I might have made that note to you. I was actually born in Dearborn.
Okay.
So very, very, very close to where you are now. And spent, I don't know, the first 27 years of my life south of Detroit in the
okay.
Downriver area. You've heard that term, Downriver area?
Downriver, yep, I have, yep.
Yeah, I went to school in Southgate, Michigan. And had been
okay.
there, yeah. So, and then I'll tell you what, one of those winters, one year, the winter just got hold of me, and I said, you know what, I'm done. And I gave pretty much everything I owned to my brother. I moved to Maui.
That's not a bad decision.
Well, I got to tell you, it was an impromptu decision. I've never been there before, didn't know anyone there. But I knew that I had to get as far away from that snow as I possibly could. And now I've migrated to the West Coast, California. And as I look out the window right now, it's probably starting to head towards 70 degrees and has been in and out of that temperature range all through the winter.
Jealous. Yeah, it's above freezing today. So that's a step forward for us.
Which is fortitude on its own. You know, I mean, I don't know, back in the day when I lived in Michigan, the furthest distance I think I've ever run was probably about 3 miles. And, you know, and obviously in the winter, all the athleticism occurred indoors, you know, I'm really a big fan
right.
of racquetball and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just whatever I can do to stay out of the cold. So I can't imagine what it must be like for you to train in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, usually it's not too bad, but this winter was just brutal. I mean, we got almost 100 inches of snow, and they're saying we still might get some before it's all done, and that's about twice as much as we usually get, so it was just cold. It was just really, really cold this year, too, so it did make it tough. It makes Maui sound very nice.
So, Luke, tell me, regionally there with your distance running project, and I'm assuming aside from that particular project, you guys also coach a lot of, I guess I'm going to use a global term, I'll say novice runners. How many people do you touch? Now, I'm not talking about through the internet or what have you, but do you guys physically are involved with training on a regular basis?
You know, we get, you know, Kevin Keith is, you know, the main coaches of the distance project of the Elites. I actually run, you know, they're my coaches. You know, I run for the Elite distance program as well. And so with that, you're looking at probably about 20 to 30, depending on where we're at with members as far as the Elite program. And then just with the community stuff that we do, you're looking at maybe another 100 to 200 people, depending on time of the year, and then you throw in, you know, what I do with the online coaching and stuff. You're looking at, you know, we coach about 110 people a month between myself and our coaches, and then we write schedules for another few people, and then, you know, with the schedules we sell, and we sell, you know, 100 to 200 a month. So you're looking at definitely several hundred people over the course of the year, maybe, you know, a couple thousand people a year that we're helping. So
okay, cool.
It's growing for sure.
Yeah. So now I got a buttload of questions. I got to be honest with you. All right.
Okay.
So, we live in parallel worlds, you and I. I see that I've been to your website, and I've kind of, you know, dissected it to see what you guys were up to. And I see that you also, and I'm assuming that it's you, being that you're an exercise physiologist, you're performing VO2 max testing, resting metabolic testing, doing gait evaluation, that type of thing?
Correct. Yep. Not a whole lot, but we do a little bit of it, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's what I do that's my day job. That's what I do every day and have been doing. Well, VO2 testing, I've been performing VO2 tests on athletes for working on 20 years now.
Okay.
Been at it a long time. And I have tested, oh, gosh, I mean, just scads of people from all walks of life in various sports.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I looked at your book, I've read them both now. To be more precise, I kind of speed read the first one and spent a lot more time on the second one. What I like about your book is, and I'm sure you couldn't help yourself, is that in the first part of the book, you very, very adequately explained the physiological adaptations that occur relative to intensity of training and where substrate utilization comes about metabolically and how much energy is coming from where relative to the work you're doing. And you did a really good job of breaking that down.
I appreciate it. Yeah, that was actually a big focus of the book, was to be able to do that. You know, just with people I've talked to, with a lot of the runners I've worked with, it's, you know, there's a ton of great information out there, but some of it's so technical that people don't understand it. And it's hard for me to understand it at times, too. And I thought when we first sat down with the marathon book, that was a big, because I knew the program worked. I knew that was going to be an easy sell once people bought into it. But the physiology, most people, they focus so much on one thing of our program, you know, the long run, and they don't see why it is the way it is been set up. And that was one of the big things I wanted to do, was take the physiology of it and say, listen, this is why we're doing it, because this is what physiology says. You can't argue with that, but make it practical at the same time. So that's a good compliment that we get about the book, and that's probably one thing
I can tell you that, you know, again, since we kind of share the same bed here, the biggest frustration I've had over the past 20 years is not so much to understand what I'm doing, but to get other people to understand what just occurred after I've given them a test. So,
exactly.
You know, I get John Doe comes in for a VO2 test. You know, and as you know, the test from start to finish is maybe 15 minutes, and then you pull them down, and then you explain to them what your anaerobic threshold is. I spend a lot of time looking at respiratory quotient and getting a sense of where the energy is being utilized. Okay, so we go through this whole process, and I try, in as quick a time and as efficiently as possible, my goal is to explain this information so when the guy walks out, he's not spinning. He gets it. He understands what he needs to be doing.
Exactly.
That's a very tough thing to do, right?
It is, yeah. And honestly, I mean, when I do testing, I don't even necessarily focus on VO2 max, because people come in here, they are fit. We know they're fit. We know they're going to have a pretty high VO2 max. I mean, that's not going to be any enlightening thing. I want to know how – I want to take that test. And like you said, I want to put something in their hand when they leave that they can practically use in their own training. And, you know, you can tell, oh, yeah, your VO2 max is, you know, 65 mL per kg per minute. Well, okay, what does that mean? You know, how is that going to impact me? You know, and that's what I want to put in, okay, this means these days need to be here, you know, all the way up through the pace ranges, and be able to say, when this changes, when these paces change, then you know you're more fit and things like that. So, I don't want to just give them a number and say, okay, there you go, off you go.
Right, so exactly what I do. What I try to do, and, you know, just to kind of get this out there so we can build from this, I tell people that, number one, and you can concur with me, maybe not, I don't know, but it's a rare occasion where I can get somebody to give me 100% effort on a treadmill.
Exactly.
And so the VO2 max to begin with is really kind of a futile attempt. You know, you're really going to see more, maybe 85-90% max, right?
Right, right. Especially if they've never done a test before. Then,
exactly.
You know,
what system do you use for testing?
You know, in fact, you're a really good situation. We are in an office with myself and a local kind of triathlete legend here, Bonnie Karras, and then Clint Mirren has his physical. We actually sublease space from Clint's physical therapy office, and then there's another young man who does bike fittings and sells a lot of bike components and bikes and stuff like that. But anyway, we're all under one roof, and Bonnie brought her core cardio coach with her from there. So that's what we use because it's what's available. And, you know, there's definitely other systems, as you know, that I would probably preferably use, but I don't have 15 grand laying around.
Yeah. Or more.
To buy
or more.
Right, exactly.
Well, I've owned a couple different systems. My initial system was through MedGraphics. And I think my initial purchase for this entire setup, I think I had $40,000 invested with the ergometer. It was a lot of money. Because I used to test, I was contracted by the LA Kings, and I would go through the whole roster of the hockey players. And we used to do wind gate testing and anaerobic power. But I use the core cardio coach myself right now. But this analyzer does O2 and CO2. So I get a pretty good look.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
and I build my case when I work with people based on respiratory quotient, and you know, and generally I'll adjust what is presumably their threshold relative to the RQ and what have you. And I don't want to lose my audience with you. I know you totally get this stuff, but where I'm going with this is that I looked at the broad stroke of what you've written in your books. And it makes perfect sense to me, okay? I get it. And the average consumer, if I was to pick one thing that I think that they do wrong when they're preparing for a marathon or a half marathon is they're weekend warriors. They spend a tremendous amount of volume training on the weekend and dedicate very little to, if any, running during the week. And then they're progressively increasing the amount of volume they're doing over the weekend till eventually they break down. You find that fairly accurate?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so what I agree with you most on all of this is that to progressively increase the volume of the work through the course of the week, and also to make sure you're including some variation in intensity.
Yeah.
Now, I set this up as best I could because this is the question that's really, really chawing at me right now.
Okay.
No place in this book do you mention heart rate training.
No.
And I'm based on where you come from, I'm a little perplexed.
My main thought on that is people you work with want to run a certain time. So say they want to break 4 hours or you know, qualifying for Boston, whatever the case is, they need to be able to run a certain pace. And in order to do that, you need to be able to handle certain paces in training. So that's why I know you target. I think with people I work with, it's just they want to run a certain goal, so we have to set it up so that they can hit a certain goal. And if those paces are too tough for them, then in this particular training segment, to me that says the goal is too ambitious. So I really like to keep that as simple as possible. And honestly, you know, I am the spokesman for Kevin and Keith on this, and you know, I don't think any of our elite athletes use heart rate monitors. And I just find, like, I can just think of a few people I coach personally that, you know, they're businessmen, and so they're they travel all the time. And they go to California, some go to China, Japan, you name it. And they're gone more than they're home. And for me to put them on a heart rate training kind of guideline wouldn't make any sense for those guys because they're just all over the place, you know, and they're high-stress guys. There's no way that's relevant to where they're at fitness-wise.
So I don't understand that. I really don't understand that. To be honest, Luke, I'm just going to be upfront with you. And, you know, I respect what you're doing, but I have to try to wrap my head around what you're telling me here because here's what I see. And again, I've been doing this a long time, and I coach runners. And regardless of the level of athlete, and by the way, let me share with you. I did a project where I took 20 runners, and we got some sponsors on board, and I shopped for 20 runners. The way that they got on this team, and by the way, we gave them carte blanche. Once we picked them to be on this project, we gave them carte blanche. That means that we wrote the nutrition for them, we did all the diagnostics, we set them up with shoes, everything that they possibly could ever hope or want, we provided them. And then we took them through about, I think it was about 15 or 16 weeks worth of training, and it wasn't a long race, it was a 10-mile race. And what I did was I evaluated these people, let them run around the track, and I did not pick the fastest people. I looked at the group, and I think we did like three interviews, and through the course of these interviews, I've had 100-some-odd people that tried to get on this project. And I held up my hand in the form of a C, and the C represented compliance. I said, if you want to get on this team, this is what you need to do. And I told them they needed to comply. In other words, whatever I tell you to do, you're going to do. I don't care what you've done. I don't care how fast you are. You have to do what I ask you to do throughout the course of this training. Otherwise, just leave right now. We picked 20 people, and I had some people that were really good runners coming in and very, very hard-headed about the way they're going to train. Many of them did not wear heart rate or would not follow heart rate because they didn't understand it. And so suggesting like what you suggested was, you know, people traveling and, you know, having them sit still well enough to follow this program might be difficult, but... So here's what we did. We had them all tested. We found their threshold. I prescribed their aerobic training zones, and I showed them what their lactate threshold looked like. I told them what I wanted to do, and we set about doing the training. At this race that we went to, we blew the doors off all the competition. We virtually won every age group and won the race overall, and it was based on heart rate prescription. So everything that you're doing makes perfect sense to me, but I would think that it would be that much more interesting if when you're trying to keep someone aerobic, you're pretty confident that the yield from the effort is going to be, say, 20% more appropriate than it might have been if they were just guessing. Or when you take them over the threshold, the percentage of intensity over threshold was such that there's a much more refined adaptive process. Does that not make any sense at all? Tell me. Hit me with a stick if you think you need to.
I mean, it makes sense, but I mean, you got to understand that if I'm working with people online or, you know, people just reading a book, I mean, I really can't monitor their heart rate and I can't really control them. So for me, it's kind of not really the best thing to look at something that I can't control with them anyway. I mean, yeah, if you're working with, you know, 10, 15 people every day, I mean, that makes a huge difference. But
right. What about with your online coaching? What metrics do you look at when you're helping these people online?
I mean, I guess we just have a difference in philosophy here. I mean, I really believe in the paces. Like, if something, I don't understand. Like, if I'm, yeah, you're prescribing people heart rates, but if I prescribe them a pace that I know is going to be aerobic, then it's the same idea. They have to follow those rules. And if they go faster than that, then I get mad. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But
right.
I don't know. I just never really have been sold on heart rate, and especially with the situation we're in, that
right.
I don't know. It's just a difference in philosophy there, I guess.
Well, here's the thing, and I guess I should probably be more clear. I'm not suggesting that heart rate should be the only metric you concern yourself with. But what I look at, and I do online coaching with athletes, I look at as many metrics as I possibly can to make decisions about what's going to happen moving forward. So I don't have a particular prescription that they're going to follow. I have a theme, and I have an intent, but I want to be able to make changes and move when the time is right, when it's most appropriate. And so what I look at is, I look at, for example, with all the technology available today, I'm able to look at GPS, tells me what their pace looks like, Even better, I like to look at cadence, stride frequency. I like to look at what the cost of work is. So to me, pace is a product. It becomes a function of what you created. But the
you're kind of oversimplifying what I'm saying too. I'm not like I'm just looking at pace too, but I guess I have a certain understanding of my athletes that they're going to be honest with me and tell me how they feel, you know, if things are getting easier for them, if they're feeling good, if they're feeling bad. I mean, yeah, it's not like I just say, oh, your pace was all right today, you're okay to go. You know, to me, having that open line of communication with my athletes is where I'm going to get most of my information. And some of them do track their heart rate, and some of them don't, and some of them track other things. And you know, I'm not going to just say you have to do this, you know, in order for me to make a good decision. Because if they're honest with me and provide me with, you know, how they're feeling and all those other things you need to look at as a coach, then absolutely I can make proper decisions with, you know, is this too much for them? Are we too far ahead of schedule? Are we too far behind schedule? All those things. So, I mean, I definitely understand what you're saying, but I'm not just looking at one thing either. You know, it's really cool. Okay. Other things I'm looking at too.
Okay. So you put a lot of stock in the relationship conversation wise. You know, they're giving you feedback.
There's no relationship if there's not an open line of communication and some people take advantage of that and some people don't. But then, to me, the people who get the most out of coaching are the ones that have that open line and recognize it. You know, don't come tell me you're hurt when you're hurt. Tell me, you know, you're not feeling good or, you know, things aren't going very well, you're stressed out, whatever the case is. And the people that do that with me are the most successful, you know, not waiting till, you know, hey, I broke my leg, you know. You know, that's not going to really help anybody.
So the distance project you guys are doing, is this an Olympic development program? Is that what that is?
Yeah, we're actually probably one of the first in the country. And like I said, I don't coach that. I'm actually a member of the ODP. I run for the ODP. You know, it's been around since 99. Kevin Keith are the coaches of the ODP, so I'm not a coach of that.
You're already qualified, though, aren't you? Are you qualified?
Yes, I'm actually qualified for 3 Olympic trials, yes.
Right. And your PR is 2:14:39, is that right?
Correct.
And that was set, I don't have it in front of me. What year was that?
2011.
Okay. How are you doing now?
Good. Busy, you know, husband, father, business owner.
I get it. Trust me, I get it. You know, I use the analogy of the dude with the tambourine between his knees, you know, blowing the horn and banging the drum, and I find myself doing 50,000 other things. It's really, really hard to focus on myself. You know, plumber with a leaky faucet, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, since you guys produce these books, I'd imagine your popularity just soared after you got these books out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we started, as far as online coaching and stuff, we took off pretty well, which is a good thing. We went from really just me coaching to, we now have 5 other coaches, so doing pretty well with that. And then, you know, we just kind of choose who's going to be the best fit. You know, it's fortunately with ODP, we have a ton of people who are familiar with the program and are, you know, can ask a lot of questions if they don't have the answers for the athletes, and that's a good thing. I mean, they can bounce questions off of me and things like that, so I think it's a pretty good group that we have right now, so it's been a pleasant surprise.
That's cool. That's very cool. And I noticed also in your book that you don't spend a tremendous amount of time on running form.
No. No.
What's your thought?
And I'm not the person to provide that information. I mean, there's so many other good experts, you know, Jay Deshari, guys like that, who are amazing with that stuff. So I'm not going to try to jump into that ring, I guess. I mean, because they can, you know, they can go buy his book for, you know, $15 and get way better information than I can provide. You know,
it was a good book.
I think you just have to realize, Yeah, it's a great book, and I've listened to Jay speak a few times, and, you know, it's I love it because it's practical. It's what anybody can do anywhere, and, you know, and he's the expert in that field, so I'm not going to pretend like I am. You know, that's his area, that's both guys' areas. There's way, you know, Jay Johnson, both guys know so much more about that stuff than I do, and I'm not even going to try to pretend like I do. I think that's when you know you just don't overstep your boundaries there, you know. And, I mean, my personal thought on it is, yeah, I mean, there's certain things people can fix, but I also think a lot of times people try to fix the symptoms and not the cause. And, you know, throwing a pair of orthotics on somebody may or may not work. You know, fixing hip strength is probably majority of people can do, and, you know, so it's just, you know, I know enough to be dangerous on that aspect, so I try not to, and I don't think people really want that from me and from Kevin and Keith anyway. I think they want, how do we train for this marathon? How do we train for this half marathon? And that's what we're good at. That's what we're gonna provide.
Got it. I just, for me, where I deal with a lot of people that they're struggling. I mean, yeah, I know you've done it. You stood at the side of a race and watched people running down the road, and you look at them and go, oh, God, that's got to hurt. You can just see the anguish in their face when they're going down the road. And these people seem to be where I get a lot of takers, where they're just so damn frustrated with the pain that they're experiencing. And, you know, so they get up one day and they go, you know what, I'm tired of being fat, and I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to start running. And then they just, they pick up a training program that they might find somewhere, and program indicates run this many miles today, that many miles tomorrow, and then on and on and on. Everything's going really well till about, you know, 4 weeks into the program when the volume gets to a place where the strength-to-weight ratio becomes an issue, and that because they're weak to begin with and they're taking on more volume than they probably should at that point in time, and the way they run is so corrupt, they're overstriding, they're heel striking, they're not equipped, they got bad shoes, whatever the case may be, and then they break down. So I find it to be, for me, I guess, I find it to be such an important thing to address so that we could get them over these problems and get them to a successful place. Would I be fairly right, and again, just tell me if I'm wrong, a lot of the people that you're accustomed to working with are pretty accomplished to begin with. Is that kind of your niche?
I think people have that perception, and so we tend to get those types of runners. But, I mean, we don't turn anybody away at all, and we have, you know, like I said, we have great people in place to be able to help anybody, you know, even if, you know, whether it's a beginning runner or somebody who just runs 5Ks or 10Ks. I mean, we have the people in place to help those guys out. But I think that is the kind of perception, is that we only work with, you know, faster runners, and that's not the case, but it ends up being who we end up getting for the most part.
Well, that's an interesting thing to interesting problem to have, I think, because I think there's nothing more beautiful to watch than a well-accomplished runner in a workout. Somebody that you really, really, you know, it's just like a racehorse, you know, they can do these things. And as a coach, it's a lot of fun to experiment with them, to see what you can get from them. Do you revel in that a lot? I mean, do you find that when you're working with athletes, that it you almost live vicariously through their efforts?
Sometimes, but I mean, it's I guess I'm in a different situation because I'm still competing at a high level. So, you know, I love when I'm getting fit and I can run some really crazy workouts that I don't think is, you know, I don't think very easy. I do love that, and I do love. I think, to me, I just take pride in when my runners, regardless of ability, have breakthroughs and they finally have aha moments, you know, and believe in themselves for the first time. You know, that's what really gets me excited. Is like when they realize that they can do really whatever they want. They just have to put in a certain amount of work, you may have to just be patient and have some faith with it, and then it finally happens. That's amazing to me when I see that, and people who run, somebody, I don't care, but somebody who's trying to break 4 hours, especially when they work hard and they know it's going to be hard. I love seeing that when the person has that breakthrough.
Yeah, it is. It's to me, again, I mean, I'm getting older, dude. I'm 61 years old right now, and I'm not looking. If I can get out of bed and get a run on at all, I'm a happy guy. Anymore, I find that I live through my athletes, the people I work with. And regardless of what, like you suggested, regardless of whether they're trying to break 4 hours or just finish without having to walk through a race, it's a big deal. So, getting back to the training program, one of the things that you guys stand behind that I find interesting, and I know you got a lot of backing on this, is that you don't like to see people get past their longest run should not ever get past 25 to 30% of their weekly volume. And you guys are pretty staunch about that, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. And I'm glad you phrased it that way, because most people, you don't let people go more than 16 miles. Well, no, it's not about 16 miles. It's not about a 20 miler. It's about running what is appropriate for your mileage. If somebody's running 40 miles a week and doing a 20 mile long run, at least 20 miles for the rest of the week, you're really limited on what you can do. You can probably choose between one SOS day, whether it's a tempo, strength, or speed workout, but you can't get both in. And then you're going to have maybe another easy run or two in there. So you really limit yourself on what you can do overall based on if you have a long run that's 35, 40, 50% of your weekly mileage. And that's the foundation of the program.
Right. I think that makes sense. But I think it's really important to consider that what you're really doing, I think the sneaky part and the coolest part about this is that it makes you realize that the rest of the week needs to be intact. It's not a function of what you're doing on the weekend, right? So if you're thinking, I got to get this 20 miler in, and you've not gotten past 30 miles in a week, you're asking for trouble,
right?
Because what you're going to do is you're going to spend 70% of the following week trying to recover from the effort you did.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's exactly right. And that's how we try to tell people. It's like, okay, so you have a 20 miler on Sunday, which means you probably took Saturday off. You probably ran very short on Friday. You might have done something substantial Thursday, but then you do a long run Sunday. You probably took Monday off. You probably took Tuesday very, very easy. So now it's Wednesday the following week before you can even really do anything. And so there you go. You spent a whole week revolved around one run. And so you didn't train, you just survived. You survived that long run, and you really didn't do anything else, And that's how we, so if you just back that long run down a little bit, you can get so much more in during the week. And it makes that volume overall less demanding because you're not so, you haven't dug that hole so deep in the long run that it takes you a week to get out of it, And you can do other things.
So how do you feel about, and I don't even know if you commented on it in your books, but I'm going to ask, how do you feel about in the course of your week when you're trying to get your mileage up? And I think it's principally important that, getting a lot of volume in the week or concurrent weeks, that's a big deal. If time is not your friend, you got to, like you suggested, you got obligations, you got a job, you got kids, you got family, whatever. Doing split workouts, maybe putting in an hour in the morning and try to put an hour later in the afternoon. In my opinion, I think that equates to volume in the week just as well as if you were to do it the following day. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, we definitely get that question a fair amount, and I always tell them this is, something is always better than nothing, right? So I'd rather have you do that than not do that run at all, for sure, the tempo run, especially when you get to that 8, 9, 10 mile tempo during the week, that's when I really try to push people. You try to find, try to find that hour and a half, try to find the time to get that in. And, it's funny because if somebody's never done the system before, I definitely say, okay, whatever you need to do to be able to get it in, right? We'll work with each other on that. And then I find, like, over time, that they naturally just find, they'll make the time to get that, especially like that long tempo running during the week. That's kind of the hardest one to do in one shot during the week. So, it's funny, people just kind of evolve, I guess, towards trying to get that all in one run. But, yeah, definitely early on, especially if they've never done that kind of mileage before, then, you know, whatever it takes. Personally, I don't care. I would rather see you break it up into two runs than not do it at all, by any means, you know. I don't, because as soon as you start making that excuse, then it's like, okay, there's certain days here, there's some days there, and then all of a sudden the whole idea of cumulative fatigue is not really cumulative fatigue anymore. You're really recovered because you missed so many days. So it's something you got to, I don't know, you kind of do case by case, I guess, and see where that person is at and move from there.
Well, I just think that everybody recovers at different levels. And so, for example, if I had someone scheduled to do, for example, 12 miles, and the payback for that 12-mile run for them at that point in time might be so significant that they really need a couple days to recover. I mean, so even if they don't recover that, and they, you know, they take on the work that's supposed to be scheduled to follow it, that it's just kind of mud, it's not really good work, where if leading up to the ability to do that, if they did like 6 in the morning and 6 in the afternoon, and that's more manageable for them, I guess that's what I was getting at. Do you think that that's a reasonable conclusion? Is that something you might want to, you would be okay with?
Well, like I said, I mean, it's definitely a case-by-case basis. You know, if I'm working with somebody and, you know, that's where that open mind of communication comes into play. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I'd rather have them do that, break it up into two runs, than try not to do it at all, or just cut the one run short and not do the other mileage later on, or whatever the case is. So, yeah, like I said, it just depends on the person. I mean, you said, I mean, everybody recovers at a different rate, and you know, one thing we'll do too is I do work with people who do have kind of either odd schedules or more free schedules. You know, they can, if they need 2 hours to run, they can take 2 hours to run. What we'll do is a 9-day cycle where we go SOS day, 2 days recovery, SOS day, 2 days recovery, and then a long run, or, you know, whatever the case is. So,
can you define SOS for people that are listening?
Strength, something of substance, which is either a speed workout, strength workout, or tempo run, or a long run.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, Squid, finish your thought. It's a 9-day cycle.
Yeah, so we just give them an extra day of recovery in there, and, you know, but that means, you know, they might have to do a long run during the middle of the week. So it really, again, that depends on if the person has the schedule that can accommodate that. And we've actually done that with a few people recently. And it's definitely, you know, there's a couple of them are in their 30s, and then a couple of guys are in their 40s that we've kind of been experimenting with this a little bit. But it seems to work great for those guys, because it is hard workout for those guys, and they can just give them that extra day. And you know, we do that with the elite program. It's a 9-day cycle, and it definitely can give you just that extra day recovery to allow you to have more quality the next workout. You know, some people, what I'll do too is, you know, we'll do Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll do a workout, and then Saturday or Sunday they'll do their long run. And then the following week, instead of a long run, we'll maybe do a longer tempo on the weekend. And I've done that with a few people and had some success with that too. So, like, I mean, like you said, I mean, it totally depends on who you're working with and what, you know, you do what you have to do. And you know, if it means running two runs a day, then you do two runs a day. If it means giving them an extra day because, you know, they need that extra day, and, you know, that's the difference between the schedules in the book and then hiring a coach to work with too, you know, where, you know, you can actually observe what that person is doing, where, you know, you're taking schedules that are in a book that are meant for a huge spectrum of people. You know, if you're trying to fit in what would work for the majority, even though a lot of people could probably tweak it for their own personal, you know, abilities and needs.
Yeah. So the principal concerns in your philosophy are that you don't allow your long runs to exceed 25 to 30% of your weekly mileage. You have varying intensities throughout the course of the week. And so if you were to take the average consumer that's listening to us right now, you know, I guess somebody mad at me one time because I referred to them as a consumer, but I guess someone listening to us right now is consuming this information, so I'm going to stand by
it.
So there's people listening right now, and they're looking for that sound bite that's going to lead them to the promised land. So talking to the people directly, I'm going to run a half marathon in 4 months, and this is new for me. What would be the most critical things that they should focus on?
I think the first thing is being aware of that it's not going to be easy, that it's definitely going to take a commitment, and there's going to be days you don't want to do it, and there's going to be days where you wondered why on earth you decided to do it, but it's all worth it on the race day. So I think just recognition of how, because you hear so many people, oh, you know, I want to do this, I want to do that, but they don't really realize what is involved in doing it. It's not like you just show up at the starting line and run a half marathon or a marathon. You know, you've really got to do yourself a favor and train properly. So that's not even just saying using my our system. That's using any system. You got to be properly trained. Specific to us, I think just don't discount easy days. I think there's so much out there referring to easy runs as junk mileage and this and that, and it's not. It's the easy runs and easy running is the foundation of your fitness, and without that, I always describe it as, you know, think of fitness as a house, and you have the roof, which is peak, and then you have the walls and the foundation, and easy runs are really that foundation, and without it, you can have the fastest blood turnover in the world, but if you have nothing about that foundation, then it's meaningless. You have a roof sitting on the ground, and it's not going to get you anywhere. So don't discount your easy runs. Build your fitness from the bottom up. So start with your easy runs, you know, and get out there and get your runs in, and then build from there. Push everything up from the bottom. Don't try to work it from the top, because you're limited. You're more limited that way. You can't really pull your fitness up. You have to push it up. And then, again, to our program specifically, I would say don't look at what you're doing 12 weeks from now or 16 weeks from now. Look at what you're doing today and this week. And because I think a lot of times people are really intimidated when they see the overall weeks, you know, 12, 14, 16 weeks into a program. So don't focus on where you're gonna end up. Focus on what you're doing now, and then those things become easier as you put the work in now. So that's what I would focus on, because I think there's a lot of good programs out there for sure, and there's a lot of programs that will get you where you need to be. So it doesn't matter. Doesn't particularly matter what you do, as long as you do something. And you know, I'm definitely not. If you read some of the things I write and some of the things I talk about, you probably get that sense I'm anti 3-day programs, which I'll be honest, I am. But that's more for long term development. But I mean, if you follow something and you haven't before, you're going to be more fit than you were. And that's what you want to be. So there's just a lot you can do with.
That's all great advice. And I think that the key to all of this is obviously the consistency. You got to get out there and do something, right?
Yeah.
A little something's better than nothing. I would add to that, and, you know, showing you how staunch I am about this, I would add to that if people are new to training and they have really no relationship with the effort, You know, you, what you draw upon is, well, when I was younger, this is the way I ran. So you go charging down the road, and you have no perception of pace. You have no perception of effort. You just find, oh, man, how do you run 10 miles? I can't get past 2. Well, the level of intensity in their mind when they're trying to get their run on, because they're not comfortable with running to begin with, is that they push themselves too hard. Their body is so untrained that any effort that they throw out there is going to be anaerobic anyway. You can't even perceive how 3 weeks from now that's going to turn into 10 miles or 5 miles or whatever it might be, because what you're feeling in the moment is that, wow, this is hard. How the hell do they do this? And it's because you're just not doing the right thing. So get a freaking heart rate monitor and find out, at least, even through perception, I can do it over the radio here, is use the Maffetone method. Just subtract your age from 180 and use that as a standard that right about there is going to be easy. If you stay close to that, you're good to go. And progressively try to build your speed up as your fitness improves. Would you at least agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with, you know, people just tend to go out and run every bit as hard as they can when they first start out. And that obviously limits to how much you can run, especially early on. And you know, it just turns people off from running too, because that's how people get hurt. And, you know, they don't see the improvement that they could if they just learn that if they back off, then you can cover more ground. But and that's how, like, you know, when I work with the beginners that I do work with, I always tell them focus on duration first, and the intensity will take care of itself once you become more fit. And that's, you know, that's you're right. People focus too much on intensity right away, and they say, well, yeah, exactly. How can I run 10 miles if I can't even run 2? And then they just end up frustrated and leaving the sport. So absolutely, and I would say, you know, if you are a beginner, that's why it's so important to, you know, get involved with local, you know, like we have group runs from the running stores, you know, pretty much every running store throughout the week, and find something, find somebody to, you know, run with, find, you know, find a coach or a group or a running club, something that's going to, you know, provide you with some sort of that beginning education. And that's kind of the biggest thing you can do for yourself, is learn from what other people have done. And, you know, I think that's huge. You just got to get involved. If you try to do it by yourself, it's just, yeah, you're going to end up frustrated. And, you know, we don't want that. We want you in the sport. You know, that's kind of what Kevin has said a lot of times, I don't want somebody to run a marathon as a bucket list thing. I want them to run that marathon and then say, hey, you know what? I think I want to do another one. And keep running, you know, be a runner for life, not just, you know, a bucket list thing.
Sure. Well, I agree with you. Listen, Luke, I really enjoyed speaking with you. I would hope one day we'll get a chance to meet. I'm not coming out there, dude. You got to come out this way.
Yeah,
I'm done with cold weather. I'm just done with it. But this is an excellent read. Both of these books are I highly recommend reading these books. The marathon book is great. The half marathon book is also great. Anybody that's trying to participate in either one of these events, I think this is a great read. And again, I really appreciate the education in the beginning of the book. I think a lot of people need that, and I think he did a great job explaining how the body operates and how the adaptations occur relative to the work you do. So, again, I really, really enjoyed having you on the show. I wish you the best of luck. And anything else you want to plug before we shut it down?
We've got some exciting things going on with us as far as with our site, and, you know, you actually gave me a lot of ideas for some topics to write about and put in our blog posts and things like that. So definitely, you know, HansonsCoachingServices.com is our site, and, you know, we offer the coaching and we offer schedules, all that business. But hopefully we try to put a lot of content out there for everybody to read too. So sign up for our email list. We don't always send out as blog posts, you know, what we've written. So sign up for that, stay updated with that. And yeah, I mean, you definitely gave me some topics to write about for, especially with beginners and things like that. So,
what's the website?
HansensCoachingServices.com.
Excellent. If you're curious, you want to bounce anything off me just for whatever, just I'm always here for you, buddy.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So we're going to go ahead and shut it down. You have an amazing weekend, my friend, and train safe and stay healthy.
You too, sir.
You bet. Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.